This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Who's going to run the country's most powerful economic institution? From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The U.S. Central Bank has more control over the country's economy than just about any institution in the world, and the people nominated to help run it are up for a vote later today in the Senate Banking Committee. That includes current chair Jerome Powell, who's up for a second term, and some newcomers who might dramatically change the makeup of the Fed's board if confirmed. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is here to tell us about them. Good morning, Nancy. What can you tell us about these new folks?
Good morning, Sabri. So they are Lisa Cook, nominated to be a Fed governor if confirmed by the committee in full Senate. She would be the first Black woman on the Fed Board of Governors. She's a professor of economics and international relations at Michigan State University. Her research focuses on how racial inequality and violence limits economic growth. The committee will also vote on Philip Jefferson as a Fed governor. He's an economics professor and dean at Davidson College. His research focuses on poverty and inequality, and he would be just the fourth Black man to serve on the Fed board.
President Biden has also nominated Sarah Bloom Raskin as vice chair for supervision on the Fed board, basically the Fed's top banking cop. What's her story?
There were some concerns about Bloom Raskin's involvement with a fintech company called Reserve Trust, chartered in Colorado. She was on the board. The Kansas City Fed wouldn't give Reserve Trust a master account back in 2017. A master account gives access to the Fed's payment systems. Reserve Trust did get a master account a year later. Raskin's critics say she intervened improperly to help, but the Kansas City Fed says Reserve Trust got the account because it changed its business model and Colorado reinterpreted its banking laws. If Bloom Raskin and Biden's other female nominees are confirmed, the Fed board will be majority women.
Oh, wow. All right. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Earnings are due out this morning from Airbnb. Folks on Wall Street are expecting some strong numbers for a couple reasons. First, travel and tourism are rebounding and are supposed to actually get back to pre-pandemic levels this year. That's according to the World Travel and Tourism Council. And two, you've still got tons of remote workers booking long stays at rental properties. Marketplace's Savannah Marr checks in on some communities that have seen a boom in that kind of visitor.
There's been a shift among visitors to New Hampshire's Lakes region.
Instead of coming for a few days, they may come for the month.
Carmen Gifford with the region's Chamber of Commerce says most of these visitors have been choosing vacation rentals over hotels.
They come for their vacation to go out and hike and ski. Then they add working remote on either end of it, and so it becomes a blend.
But that comes at a cost, says Stephen Peterson, a regional economist with the University of Idaho.
If it's sustained, it could take a number of houses out of the housing market.
In many communities, it already has. Take Kootenai County in northern Idaho, where Peterson says the vacation rental market is contributing to an affordable housing crisis.
Only 25% of the population would be able to afford a home up in Kootenai County at today's prices.
Peterson says digital nomads provide a short-term boost to the local economy, but people who work in that economy are getting priced out. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 1 to 2% range, with the Dow future up 374 points. 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.046%. So there's the inflation that we as consumers see directly, and that is at the highest it's been in more than four decades. But there's also inflation at the wholesale level, and we'll get the latest numbers on that later this morning. It's called the Producer Price Index. This kind of inflation affects anyone buying at the wholesale level, and that would include school districts. They buy food for the cafeteria, fuel for fleets of buses, all the while dealing with higher pay for teachers and other employees. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that.
Superintendent Paul Imhoff leads Upper Arlington City School District in Ohio, just outside of Columbus, where they get a lot of snow. And the schools have to keep their sidewalks and parking lots cleared.
So we go through an enormous amount of salt just so our schools are safe and they can be accessed and we can keep the doors open.
The district is now paying more for all that salt. Imhoff says prices have also gone up for things like paper and cleaning supplies. He leads the school superintendents association and says other districts are seeing prices rise too.
I think a lot of people are trying to determine if this is a new normal or if this is a bump in the road.
If it is the new normal, another cost that could be affected is wages. Like many employers, school districts are facing pressure to raise them.
Their employees are also paying more at the pump. They're paying more at the grocery store. They're paying more for, you know, a used car.
Marguerite Rosa directs the Edunomics Lab at Georgetown University. The federal government did give districts $122 billion in the American Rescue Plan. That's the stimulus that passed last year. But that money is for improving HVAC systems, hiring counselors, and other things related to the pandemic. It's not for long-term increased costs. Janelle Kubinick with the nonprofit WestEd says districts have to plan for the future.
You know, many of them are faced with saying, well, we can't afford to have all the expenses we have if we don't see a dramatic increase in ongoing revenue.
In Ohio, Superintendent Imhoff is going to ask voters to increase his district's revenue and has to consider the different inflation forecasts.
Because we don't like to ask our voters for money any more often than every 3 or 4 years. And so we have to make sure that we ask for enough, but we certainly don't want to ask for too much.
Imhoff says he has to decide how much money to ask for by this summer. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.